What's going on, Blue Jays fans, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Blue Jays. It's part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your co-host, Lucas Weiss. I want to thank all the listeners who make Locked On Blue Jays their first listen of the day. You can find my work on Twitter at Weiss Sports, where I'm available on Sportsnet, ESPN's The Undefeated, the Toronto Star, as well as play-by-play broadcasting for Saga 960 AM Radio. Again, the Locked On Blue Jays podcast is free and available on all platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Stitcher. So make sure to like, rate, and subscribe.
You are Locked On Blue Jays, your daily Toronto Blue Jays podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
On today's episode, we are doing yet another crossover edition. Collaboration, anything you want to call it. We're bringing on a special guest on this episode. But first, like to first introduce MLB analyst Jen Smith. Jen, welcome back to the pod.
Thank you. I'm really excited to do another crossover episode here.
Yes. So, I mean, we've done the Rays, we've done the Red Sox, we've done the Yankees. There's one team left in the American League East. And that, of course, is the Baltimore Orioles. And we are excited to be joined by Locked On Orioles co-host Connor Newcomb. Connor, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, Lucas, Jen, thank you so much for having me on. And listen, you know, it sounds like you went in order of standings from this year and probably next year. And you know, we'll see. Maybe even when the Orioles get competitive, they might still be in last, considering what this division is starting to look like.
Yeah. Rough times in Oriole land for those fans at Camden Yards in Baltimore. But it's funny, Connor, because doing research for this episode, I was looking back and it was only a few years ago when the Orioles were actually pretty good. They won the division in 2014. I mean, 7 years is a long time. But when you look at some of the names on that roster, like Davis, Machado, Jones, Britton, Cruz, I mean, the list goes on. And then, of course, the 2016 wild card almost feels like a little bit of a turning point for both franchises in that wild card game, Blue Jays Orioles. And, of course, for the Orioles, it just went downhill from there. I'm just sort of curious from your perspective, what's it like right now in Baltimore with this Orioles team?
Yeah, it's been so interesting to see the fan base kind of shift because, you know, that stretch you talk about, it started in 2012 when the Orioles got back to the playoffs as a wild card for the first time since 1997, for the first time since, you know, guys like Cal Ripken and Brady Anderson and Mike Mussina had it rolling in the 90s. They went on a 15-year drought and they got back in 2012 and they were essentially the Seattle Mariners of this year, what that Orioles team was. Like, they had no business being in the playoffs. They won a million one-run games and they got in. And then they built a good team. And from 2012 to 2016, they made the playoffs three times. They had the most wins in the American League in that five-year stretch. But it was interesting because, you know, they gave out a couple of big contracts. They gave Chris Davis a lot of money, as we know, and they gave, you know, JJ Hardy and Adam Jones some good extensions. But at the end of the day, you know, they weren't spending like a first place team, and yet they were, and they were kind of almost dumpster diving for players, and they were getting the most out of guys like Steve Pierce and Ryan Flaherty. And when that stopped in 2017, the year after the wild card game, you looked around and you said, you know, the Orioles had kind of gutted their farm system. They weren't spending that much money and the great players they had were all becoming free agents at the same time. And they just shut it down in 2018, traded everybody who you could remember being good in an Orioles uniform was traded that year. And it was not just that. GM Dan Duquette was out, manager Buck Showalter was out. And now it's just a whole new group of people with Mike Elias as the GM and Brandon Hyde as the new manager. And, you know, there is nobody on this team. There is one player left on this team that played in that 2016 wildcard game, and that is Trey Mancini, who was a rookie and pinch hit in extra innings in that game. He is the only guy left. And so it's a whole new, and it is a rebuild. Like, the Orioles have said, this is a rebuild. And so it's been interesting to see the fans buy in, because I think Orioles fans are so much more invested in things like, you know, the deadline to protect players from the Rule 5 draft and are so much more interested in the MLB draft itself because the O's are picking, you know, in the top five every year and so much more invested in the minor leagues. Like, fans are watching the Bowie Bay Sox and the Norfolk Tides, our AAA and AA teams, to, you know, not levels that rival the major league team, but like are legitimately sitting down once a week and watching the minor league teams. And so it's been on one side interesting to see all that interest go other places, but the major league team, but at the end of the day, like, they got to spend a little bit of money and win. And we're getting to this point heading into 2022 where the Orioles have been bad for four straight years. And it's starting to turn where it's okay. We had this plan. Now things start need, they really need to start going upward. And if they don't go upward next year, even by the slightest margin, I think a lot of the fan base is going to start to turn on this, this regime.
Well, it's interesting that you talk about the plan, because I feel like there have been franchises in Major League Baseball who've done something similar. I mean, I look at the Chicago Cubs and the Houston Astros, right? And obviously the Astros, you know, certainly have been tarnished by their cheating scandal, but both, I mean, the Astros and the Cubs sort of did something similar, right? I mean, really sort of embraced this whole notion of, you know, like, you know, quote unquote tanking, if you will, and tried to make sure that they would, you know, accumulate these picks and, you know, really hit some home runs, pun intended, on some of the prospects. And certainly for Chicago, they won a World Series. For Houston, they won a World Series in 2017. They made a couple more after that. But I just feel with Baltimore, I mean, you could only sell that plan for so long, like you said, Connor. And eventually when it doesn't work out, it's, you know, fans are going to turn on the franchise. But I think it's really must be frustrating too, because you look at the AL East right now and the four teams that you're facing, you know, including the Blue Jays and then Yankees, Red Sox, Rays, they're all on the up and up, which makes it very challenging.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough because, you know, you look around, and if you're an Orioles fan, 2023 has kind of been the goal year that Mike Elias has not set himself. But when you look around the farm system, you look around how they're spending money, it's kind of the year that makes sense, 2023. And maybe that's not a playoff year, but that's a year where the Orioles feel like they can go into the year and say, all right, we are not tanking anymore. We are putting a competitive baseball team on the field, and we are trying to win baseball games, and we'll see where that takes us. And kind of the year after that seems like the year where the Orioles should try to compete for the playoffs. But you look around this division, you have obviously a Toronto team that's only getting better. You have the Yankees who are going to continue to spend, and they have better prospects than they have ever had. You have the Rays who are always going to do their Rays thing. And I thought the Red Sox might have been the team that the O's could at least surpass, because they had traded their entire outfield and, you know, didn't want to pay for Mookie Betts. And then the Red Sox come two games from the World Series this year, and they finished better than any other AL East team. And so you look around and you don't see an end in sight to these runs. Now, the Rays always have a little bit of a drop off because of the way they operate. They'll always have a 2 or 3 year stretch, you know, every decade where they don't win. And the hope for the Orioles is you can slip in when the Rays are in that drop off. Maybe the Red Sox, you know, all their moves don't work out, and you can slip in as maybe the third best team a couple years from now and try to get into a wild card. But that's what just doubles up on this whole situation, because the O's can put together a team that should win 90 games. But because of the competition, you might only come away with an 81-81 season just because of the division you're playing in.
Right. And that's something that, you know, is such a challenge for all the teams in this division, is to remain at that, you know, really high competitive level just to even have a shot at the wild card, it seems, right? Like, you know, us Blue Jays fans obviously watched a 91 win team fall short. And, you know, what can you do when you play in the AL East? Connor, 2023 is not that far away. And so if Baltimore is going to, you know, be significantly better than they currently are by 2023, they obviously have a lot of work to do now. So what would you consider to be a successful offseason for the Orioles?
Yeah, so, you know, there's realistic things that will happen, and there's things I would love to happen. Like, I would love to see the Orioles make that move right now, similar to what the Tigers are doing. You know, signing Eduardo Rodriguez, maybe bring in Carlos Correa. Now, I don't know if that brings the Tigers to top of the division team next year, but in 2 years, like, they might be ready to go. And if you remember back a couple years ago when the Padres signed Manny Machado, his first year, the Padres were still bad, but they were looking forward to Tatis coming up and all these players coming up, and then they got good. The Nats did it with Jason Worth a few years ago. They signed him to a big contract. They were bad in his first year, and then his second year, things started clicking, and the Nats became the Nationals that we've known for the last decade, getting into the playoffs. So I'd love to see the O's make that signing this year, but I think it'll happen next year if it happens. So in terms of this offseason, what the Orioles need to do is obviously spend some money, because they basically spent none in free agency since Mike Elias took over. And a couple things they need to do. First, they need to get two starting pitchers for this year. And these could even be guys on one-year deals, but I would prefer at least one of them to be on at least a two-year deal. Guys who, you know, and it doesn't even have to be ace-type guys, but, you know, guys who have kind of resurrected their career, maybe won't cost as much. Kind of the Giants model of bringing in the guys like Alex Wood and Kevin Gausman and all those guys last year. The Orioles need to find a couple of those guys to bring in this year on major league deals who can give them innings. And, you know, maybe they're bad and they can trade them at the deadline. Maybe they pitch throughout the whole year. But the Orioles need a couple of starting pitchers who are true major league pitchers that are not Matt Harvey and not Felix Hernandez that the Orioles brought in at the beginning of last year, but established major leaguers who will cost them $8 to $10 million per year to bring in on the team. The other thing they need is an infielder, at least one. Now, they've brought in an infielder each of the last three seasons to help this team. It's gone Jonathan Villar, Jose Iglesias, and Freddy Galvis the last 3 years. And those players have been fine. They've played shortstop and done well. But, you know, I'd like the Orioles to take that next step, maybe give out a multi-year deal to an infielder. And, you know, at that point, that's kind of the biggest needs. That they need a catcher to supplant Adley Rutschman, and they probably need a relief pitcher. But it's hard to say what would be best this offseason, because they're going to be a losing team next year. And they haven't shown that they're really going to spend this offseason, because I think this offseason is so interesting, because especially at the position player, there's like a high level of guys. And then at a lot of the positions the Orioles need, there's a high level that's out of their range. There's a huge drop off. And then there's like guys that cost $1 to $2 million a year. So I think next offseason will be the time where they're really active. But this year, they just essentially need better stop gaps than they've brought in the last couple of years.
Obviously, the Orioles and the Blue Jays are in completely different positions at the moment, even though they were, you know, essentially in the same position not that long ago, just, you know, five seasons ago. But the Blue Jays front office has been very, very clear in their messaging that they're going to spend this offseason, and one way or another, they're going to get better. I'm curious, what has been the messaging from the Orioles front office?
Yeah, you know, Mike Elias is fairly transparent. He won't go to the point of saying we are tanking and trying to lose, but he's not also hiding what the Orioles are doing. He's not coming out and saying, I think we have a winner this. Like, he didn't come out before this year and say, you know, I think we might have a winning baseball team this year. And he didn't come out, you know, at the end of this year and say, it's time to spend and then not do it. He came out this year and said, listen, we haven't spent. We're going to spend a little bit of money this offseason. That's what he basically told fans. Now, fans knew that didn't mean the Orioles are going to pursue Carlos Correa or pursue Max Scherzer or Justin Verlander, or, you know, whoever it may be. But they did know that, hey, the shortstop we bring in this year might be a little better than Freddy Galvis, or the starting pitcher we bring in this year, Mike Elias has said, it's going to be better than, you know, a broken Matt Harvey, which is what they brought in last year. And that has kind of been the messaging, but it's also gone along with the fact that Elias has said again and again, like, we were gutted. Like, the Orioles had no farm system, no international scouting, none of that. Elias had to rebuild that entirely over the past couple of years, and he's done a really successful job of that. The Orioles across the board have a top two farm system in whatever, you know, outlet you look at. They're usually either number one or number two in terms of the minor league system. So they've built that up. Now it's time to spend a little bit at the major league level, but he's been pretty transparent about what the plan is. It's to acquire prospects, you know, spend more on international free agents, you know, go that route of getting Latin American ball players, and eventually kind of build things from the ground up. But it's been nice to hear him say, because he's been fairly transparent, it's nice to hear him say, hey, we are going to spend a little bit more money this offseason. And I think that's why, you know, I and many Orioles fans expect that.
Connor Newcomb, co-host of the Locked On Orioles podcast. This is the Locked On Blue Jays podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We'll be back with our conversation with Connor momentarily after these messages.
I love Thanksgiving. All the good food and treats and plenty of them. But maybe you want a yummy dessert that isn't so full of calories and sugar. It's the perfect time for Built Bar, the new holiday dessert. Replace the coconut cream pie with coconut Built Bar, or go to raspberry Built Bar instead of that raspberry pie. Lots of good flavors to replace any pie. Low calorie, low carb, low fat, high protein. Built Bar is a terrific option when you're hungry. And if Thanksgiving isn't coming around soon enough, go for a Built Bar or two. Now, how do you get Built Bar, you may ask? Well, go to built.com and use promo code LOCK15, and you'll get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com.
All right, we're back. Lucas Weiss, MLB analyst Jen Smith. This is the Locked On Blue Jays podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. We are doing a crossover episode with Connor Newcomb, the co-host of the Locked On Orioles podcast. Connor, it's interesting because we were just talking about, you know, what your, you know, what the Orioles front office is saying to fans and how the team has been, you know, really building up their farm system and how fans are really interested in things like the draft and different prospects. And it's funny how, like, you know, things can change because, you know, a couple seasons ago, that's where the Blue Jays were sort of were, you know, certainly in the, you know, the beginning of the Charlie Montoyo managerial era. 2019 was certainly not a great year for the Blue Jays, but I feel like fans could accept it, you know, because they knew that, you know, we were building towards something special. That's what Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro were telling fans. And I've said this to Jen on previous podcasts. I mean, you know, ownership and having a solid front office is so critical from, you know, and it just leads to just success, you know, going down the chain to the players. I mean, Jose Barrios today, as we're recording this podcast, just, you know, officially made his 7-year extension official. And he spoke with the media and he talked about how the culture and the city are why, you know, he ultimately wanted to stay in Toronto. And I know that falls on a bit of deaf ears sometimes, but I think it's so, so impactful. So I really do think, look, you know, having a successful front office and ownership is so critical. And I think when you speak to those years where the Orioles were good, they were good. But then I think maybe that front office wanted to do, you know, extend it a little too long. And then what happened was they weren't competitive. And then everyone just, you know, it just, you know, they had to sell. They had to, you know, clean house completely. So I'm just sort of curious from your perspective, just, you know, how important you think that is, and just having, you know, a stable front office and just getting that ownership on board with the fans so that they understand what's happening here in terms of building, you know, maybe a team that's going to have success down the road.
Yeah, it's the Orioles are in an interesting spot there because it's not to Rays level because, you know, we know the situation with the Rays. They have owners who refuse to spend any money and they might have the smartest baseball operations people in the world. And essentially, they get the budget that they are given. They probably hate that budget, but that's their budget. And then they go and somehow build a division-winning team. I fear the Orioles might be not as an extreme version of the Rays, but it's been interesting because the Angelos family is still the owners. They have been for years and years now. And, you know, they've been willing to spend on players. And, you know, they had a competitive payroll when they were winning those games and winning the division. They didn't have any kind of top 10 payroll, but it was, you know, not in the bottom 10 either. It was a competitive payroll. They gave out extensions to players like Chris Davis and Adam Jones, like I talked about back in the 90s. You know, they paid a good amount of money for a lot of, they had a lot of veteran stars on those teams that went to back-to-back ALCSs in 96 and 97. So they've shown a willingness, but right now they almost kind of weirdly work in cahoots with Mike Elias while also maybe being against each other and at odds at times, because I'm sure at the end of the day, Elias wants to win and he wants to have a championship and he wants to build this together. But Elias knows that right now, and especially the last couple of years, the best thing to do was to kind of strip it down and build it back up. And the ownership right now, I think, loves that because the Orioles have the lowest payroll in baseball. And that's why, you know, they've traded off, you know, major league players to get more prospects, and they've, you know, invested the money in, you know, a complex, a state-of-the-art complex in the Dominican Republic to develop teenage players in the Dominican instead of, you know, putting that money into a starting pitcher for 2021. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see once the prospects get there, because, you know, this front office has done a great job of building what the Orioles never had. The Orioles, Dan Duquette, around the Shohei Ohtani signing time when he was Orioles GM, literally said that the Orioles do not philosophically believe in signing a free agent from overseas. That is what he said when he was asked about the Shohei Ohtani situation. Now the Orioles are one of the bigger players when it comes to the international signing period. And, you know, now they have one of the best farm systems in baseball versus what used to be a bottom 10 farm system. So the front office has done an amazing job overhauling that in just 3 years. And now that that part is about to be over, maybe one more season of that part of it. Now that that's over, it's going to kind of flip to the ownership. Okay, the GM, all of his people have done their job. They have not spent any money. They have stripped it down and built it back up. Now it's going to be kind of on the owners to shell out some of that money. And I think Orioles fans are worried that that may not happen, because also, if you think about the last few big contracts the Orioles have put out, they've gotten burned. Chris Davis, they got burned. The last two big contracts they gave to pitchers, Ubaldo Jimenez and Alex Cobb, got burned on both of those contracts as well. And so, you know, I don't know if they're going to be scared to give out money, but it's going to be real interesting to see. But in terms of Elias getting them from nothing to something in the system, he's done a great job. Next step is win in the majors.
The Blue Jays went through a process too, where they, you know, were getting prospects and had that prospect pool, you know, either with the eye towards those players contributing to the team or being used as trade bait. And, you know, as Lucas was mentioning, you know, they've just signed Jose Barrios to an extension, and they acquired him by trading away two prospects, Simeon Woods Richardson and Austin Martin, who was generating quite a bit of excitement. Now there's Gabriel Moreno, a catcher that looks like he might contribute to this team next year. This, you know, team that is already really great on paper, and this prospect has everybody really, really excited. So I'm wondering if there are any Orioles prospects in the pipeline that have fans excited, either because of the contributions that they might make to the team or because of the trade bait that they might be.
Yeah, well, I mean, you start at the top. The Orioles right now have the consensus best prospect in baseball in Adley Rutschman. He was an one pick in the 2019 draft, a catcher, switch hitting catcher out of Oregon State. And all he's done is dominate at the minor league level. You know, went to single A after he was drafted, was at the alternate site in 2020, started this year in double A, finished this year in triple A, had fantastic offensive and defensive numbers and just outputs. He is ready for the big leagues. He is a top prospect in baseball. He is a generational talent. And the way he is described is he is not a great hitting catcher. There's been a lot of great hitting catchers, you know, the Joe Mauers of the world. He is a fantastic hitter who happens to be a catcher and happens to be a good defensive catcher. I mean, he is probably a, you know, once in a decade type prospect where you'll see hitters like him, but you won't see them who are catchers. And you especially won't see them who are great defensive catchers and great game callers and, you know, guys that can steal you a strike and throw a runner out, and then also have a 900 plus OPS at the plate and hit 30 plus homers. He's going to be ready. He's ready. He was probably ready at the end of this season, but there was no reason for the Orioles to bring him up. He should be the opening day starting catcher in 2022. If he's not, it will be clear service time manipulation with the Orioles waiting the 6 weeks or whatever it is to get that extra year, if that is still the rule under the CBA. But he'll be the Orioles catcher either way for the majority of 2022. Then the O's also have the consensus top pitching prospect in baseball, which is Grayson Rodriguez, a right-hander who they took in the first round out of high school back in 2018. And Rodriguez has just shot up everybody's rankings. And he was a top 100 guy as soon as he got drafted, but now he's a top 10 prospect in baseball and is everyone's top pitching prospect. He, you know, has a fastball in the high 90s. He's got one of the best changeup that a lot of scouts have ever seen from a right-hander, and good breaking balls to go with it. Just absolutely dominated double A this season I mean, guys could not touch him at times. He will most likely start the year at AAA next year, but we expect him to be in the big leagues in 2022 as well. And this is why it's getting so fun, because the Orioles have this farm system that is fantastic. But 2022 becomes the year where it's not just a farm system, it's rookies now.
Right.
It's guys are in the major leagues and not just sitting in AA and AAA and putting up these crazy numbers. They're going to be in the big leagues. And, you know, Rodriguez and Rutschman were just to name a few. I mean, D.L. Hall is another top 50 prospect, the Orioles' second ranked pitching prospect, a left-hander who can touch 98, 99 from the left side with a wipeout slider. He's got some ridiculous stuff. They've got some guys coming to the big leagues real, real soon. Kyle Stowers, a left-handed hitting outfielder from Stanford, who was the Orioles' basically breakout prospect this year, finished the year in AAA and just has outstanding power. These guys are coming next year. And that's what has people really excited about next season, because we know the Orioles are not going to be a winning baseball team, but at least if they're, say, 70 and 92, they're going to be doing it with all these dudes on the field that we've been waiting so long to watch.
Our new co-host of the Locked On Orioles podcast. This is the Locked On Blue Jays podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. We'll be back with our conversation with Connor after these messages. We're back and better than ever. A new web interface for the start of the basketball season. More props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. Head to our new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, we're back. Lucas Suisse, MLB analyst Jen Smith. This is the Locked On Blue Jays podcast crossover edition. We're crossing over today with the co-host of the Locked On Orioles podcast, Connor Newcomb. And Connor, you said something interesting right at the end of the last segment about the young players that are coming. And certainly, as Jen alluded to earlier, that was a position where the Blue Jays were in a few years ago, right? When Vladdy and Bo were certainly in the minors. I know that the Blue Jays will probably dominate against the Orioles again this upcoming season compared, you know, similar to last season. But when these young guys on the Orioles start to get in the majors and start to really show what they're made of, if you will, and the Orioles start getting good, it can be exciting, I feel like, in the AL East, especially with the Blue Jays versus Orioles, with just all the young guys that are on the field at that one time who are bright young stars potentially in the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be awesome, honestly. And, like, you're going to look around the division and it's going to be, like, Wander Franco, Vladimir Guerrero, and Adley Rutschman. And you are going to hear those names over and over again. And the Yankees and Red Sox are going to have a different type of guy who is going to be in those conversations and in those MVP conversations, like an Aaron Judge, who's a little bit older, obviously. But I mean, you know, it's funny being in this division. Like, Vladdy was, I believe he was the number one prospect in baseball at one point. He is now in the majors. Wander Franco was then the number one prospect in baseball. He's now in the majors. When Wander Franco graduated, you know who became the number one prospect in baseball? Adley Rutschman. Then he's going to be majors, and they're all going to be in the same division playing each other 19 times a year. And on the one hand, it stinks, because even if the Orioles get good, it's going to be impossible for more than three of those teams to get into the playoffs. And some years you're only going to get two of the teams into the playoffs from the division. But on the other hand, to have all those players facing each other, you know, multiple times a month, seemingly every single night, it's going to be really fun. Give the Orioles a couple more years, because the pitching is behind the hitting, no doubt, at both the major and minor league level. But give them a couple years and they'll at least be competitive, and they'll have exciting players. You know, they have Cedric Mullins now and Ryan Mountcastle, and we love them, but we need like eight more of those on the major league roster to be competitive, and they're coming.
It's really interesting, because we mentioned it earlier in the pod about that 2016 AL wild card between the Blue Jays and the Orioles. And it's hard to believe it's been 5 years since that. It was truly a fantastic, you know, certainly game for Toronto fans with Edwin Encarnacion's walk-off home run. And then for Orioles fans, it's filled with what ifs, right? Particularly with some of the managerial decisions of Buck Showalter in that game. But I think, you know, 5 years later, I mean, that game is just so filled with what ifs, because maybe if the Blue Jays don't win that game and maybe Showalter makes the right choices, maybe the rebuild begins earlier for Toronto. But wonder what would happen with the Orioles if they went on, and who knows what they could have done, right? So it still remains certainly in Toronto a memorable playoff game that you know, certainly ended with the Encarnacion walk-off. For Orioles fans, how do they remember 5 years ago, Connor?
Game Zach Britton didn't pitch. I mean, it's as simple as that. And when you go back and watch the game, and I have, you know, so many memories of watching that game, it was pretty clear the Orioles were probably not going to score again. Like, the O's did not have a hit, I believe, after the fifth inning in that game. And so even if Zach Britton comes in and throws two perfect innings, which he probably would have done, the Blue Jays would have walked that game off in the 13th or 14th inning, to be honest with you. Because even if you go to Zach Britton, he could probably give you two innings. Maybe he gives you three because he's running on adrenaline in the playoffs and he's the best reliever in baseball. The O's were so far away from hitting. I mean, it was guys like Francisco Liriano in that game who were just dicing up the Orioles, and they had no answer. At the end of the day, the Blue Jays were going to win that game. And I think a lot of Orioles fans have kind of accepted that. But when you have the best reliever in baseball and he doesn't pitch in the wild card game, it still hurts. I think really hurt Buck Showalter's legacy, because besides that moment, he was an unbelievable manager for the Orioles and brought them success that no one had felt in 15 years in Baltimore. And again, he managed two more years after that game, 17 and 18, but it almost felt like the end for Buck when he just did not make that move. Like, the game had passed him by a little bit, and that's just kind of how it's unfortunately still remembered. And again, it's the most recent Orioles playoff game, which makes it hurt even more.
I was at that game, and I will say, as a fan sitting in the stands, it was not clear that the Jays were going to win that game. It really was on pins and needles that entire game. I'm wondering, you know, obviously right now is a really difficult time to be an Orioles fan, just from, you know, the daily grind of a 162 game season. I'm wondering, as an Orioles fan, who is your rooting interest in the AL East, or are you just hoping for maximum chaos, let it all burn to the ground?
Well, you will never see me supporting the Yankees or the Red Sox, and that will go along with most Orioles fans, unless they play each other, in which it was kind of split. I did a Twitter poll before the AL wildcard game, and it was about 70% Red Sox, which is what I expected. O's fans just hate the Yankees a little bit more. But it is interesting beyond that, because O's fans really have nothing against the Rays, except for being like, why won't you spend money and get better? But we're kind of okay with that, because we don't need them becoming a financial powerhouse along with the prospects they have. So the O's fans really have nothing against the Rays. The Blue Jays thing is interesting, because it was a serious rivalry those couple of years, really, I'd say 2014 through 17. Blue Jays Orioles was heated, and, you know, it kind of culminated with that wild card game. But of course, you had, you know, the end of that 2016 season and all the great moments down the stretch with those two teams battling to get into the wild card. And then you had the Blue Jays, you know, then clinching on the Orioles field in 2015 to win the division, the year after the Orioles had clinched the division against the Blue Jays. And, you know, I know Jose Bautista, Orioles fans do not like him. and Orioles fans generally are okay with Edwin Encarnacion. He just happened to hit the home run that sent us into misery. And it's interesting, because I think across the board, most O's fans kind of like these Jays now, like the Vladdy, the Bo Bichette. It's a very likable group of young players. I love how they've built this team, and they, you know, they got the prospects to the big leagues, and then they started spending the money and they put together a really good group. I personally, as a University of Maryland graduate, love Kevin Smith and hope he gets a better shot. Although I know he's kind of blocked in the infield with all the great players they already have there. But generally across the board, it was pretty lovable for the Blue Jays until Robbie Ray versus Brandon Hyde happened. And when that happened this year, it started to turn the other way. And I think Orioles fans kind of want to latch on to that O's Blue Jays rivalry that was happening a couple years ago. And if the Orioles get good enough where that becomes a rivalry again, I would not mind it one bit.
We wouldn't mind it either, Connor. We wouldn't mind it either. I think it'd be a really nice treat to reignite some of those flames, if you will, of the rivalry of the past, because it was great in the mid-2010s. And I think it'll be great now with just where some of these young players are going. We are out of time, though, but before we let you go, Connor, where can people find you and the Locked On Orioles on Twitter?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Connor Newcomb _. You can find the podcast account pretty active over there at Locked On Orioles. And, of course, you can find the podcast same place you get Locked On Blue Jays, wherever you get your pods.
Jen, where can people find you on Twitter?
So, first of all, Connor, thank you for joining us tonight. Folks can find me on Twitter at baseball_Jen, and that is Jen with two N's.
Amazing. MLB analyst Jen Smith, and I'll extend my thanks as well for Connor Newcomb joining us on this crossover edition of the Locked On Blue Jays podcast. Again, I want to thank everyone for making Locked On Blue Jays your first listen of the day. Now make your second listen of the day Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. That podcast, of course, is free and available on all platforms. Locked On Blue Jays is also free and available on all platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Stitcher. So for this episode of Locked On Blue Jays, I'm your co-host, Lucas Weiss. We'll see you again soon.